Welcome to the Windshield Chronicles, a mental sequence of operation.
If you can't stop for 12 minutes to do a manual J, sorry, but you're going to sell these people a piece of equipment for thousands and thousands and thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars now, and you're not going to take 15, 20 minutes to make sure that you're giving them the right size that's going to work right? You know, just because you roll up on a house and it has a 4-ton, I mean, I started my career selling in the field, and I don't know what the percentage is.
This episode brought to you by LG and the LG ProCast podcast. The place for hot HVAC topics and cool conversations. Learn more at lghvac.com. All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us once again on Did You Know? The ESCO HVAC podcast. So today we're going to spend some time with Phil Craigbaum from LG and co-host of the LG ProCast podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Clifton. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I was listening to one of your podcast episodes with Terry, and it really started making me think a little bit more about low load scenarios, because in our own training, I just finished up a curriculum for cold climate heat pump and high performance heat pumps. And in that, I spent a little bit of time talking about the capabilities of heat pumps at different temperatures, but also the different heating capacity conditions that an inverter allows us to work in at those different temperatures. Because a lot of people don't think about like the range of capacity that we have. You know, traditionally, when we talk about single stage and two stage, we would look at heating capacity, and we really always looked at it as like the maximum capacity of that unit, especially if we were looking at like COP at different temperatures. We go, okay, at this outdoor temperature, I can produce this many BTUs at this COP. And because it's in heating mode, it's probably going to be maxed out. It's going to be, if it's a two stage, it's probably going to be running on highest stage. But when we get into inverters, that is not the case at all.
Yeah, these aren't the heat pumps that we grew up on. These aren't the heat pumps of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, you know, where the Mason-Dixon line was kind of the stopping point where you would even consider using one. I mean, we've got, you know, we just announced, I believe it's our 1-year anniversary of a consortium that we're doing with the University of Alaska, where they're studying some of our heat pumps up in Fairbanks, I believe it is. So, you know, we've got them running in Fairbanks in heating mode, and if they can run there, they can do it just about anywhere else in the U.S. to take care of the primary heating source. There are certain climates where, you know, it gets really, really cold, and there may be a need for a secondary heating source. But yeah, these heat pumps are impressive. And then the range, like you mentioned, you know, they're not always running full blast, you know, because we don't always have the coldest night of the year, right? And same for summer. You know, so the inverter gives us the ability to adjust the output, both in heating and in cooling, to meet the demand. But like you mentioned, some of the markets that are really adopting this technology, you know, of all states, Maine is the number one adopter per capita of heat pumps right now, which is kind of blew my mind when I heard that. I was like, really? Right. So, and, you know, there's some initiatives up there and some incentives that are making it very appealing to the homeowners to do such. But, you know, kudos for them for recognizing that this does work even in their climates. And, yeah, you know, and I think we were kind of get into this, that the houses that we're building today are not the houses of 50 years ago. You know, so the heating loads are dramatically different than they used to be.
Well, I look at my own home. So I've got a 4-year-old home. It's about 3,200 square feet, and it has a 3-ton air conditioner with a 60,000 BTU gas furnace. And, you know, 10 years ago, it would have been a very different scenario when we were looking at capacities. It wouldn't have been a 60,000 BTU furnace matched up with the 3-ton air conditioner here in the Midwest. It was probably a 100,000 BTU furnace, realistically. Those heat loads have significantly changed on our structures. And then when we look at the capability of the equipment, well, it's really important to understand the efficiency of these inverters in these low load scenarios. Because if I look at, let's just say we were comparing a two-stage 18 SEER traditional heat pump with a inverter 18 SEER heat pump. Well, that's at maximum capacity. When we reduce the load of that thing, we may be talking mid-20s in SEER efficiency and energy efficiency. And that's a whole game.
Or higher. I mean, it's there really is no way to quantify as of yet. You know, they don't give us the ability to publish any kind of part load ratings. Mm-hmm. Although on an inverter, technically that is a part load where we go and we get our rated SEER rating. It's our rated capacity. So one of the cool things about an inverter system is we have a 3-ton system. We're rated at 3-ton output, but that's not actually our maximum cooling output. We have the ability on those really, really hot days, because everybody likes to oversize just a little bit, right? You know, for the what ifs, or maybe I'll need a little bit more, or I sure don't want to be caught short. Well, the inverter kind of gives you a little bit of that extra, you know, and I definitely don't want people to abuse that. You know, you absolutely need to do your manual J. Your manual J is going to be enough if you do it properly, right? I mean, there's enough gimme room built into the manual J. You don't need to bump it a little bit more.
Exactly.
But hey, on 4th of July, when you got all the kids over and you're having the party and everybody's running in and out and that sliding door is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it seems like, and it's got a little bit of extra there, nothing crazy, but it, you know,
we can over
house ton depending on the equipment, but it's nice to have it when you want it.
Exactly. I was just doing a training in that same curriculum about, you know, like boost modes and cooling and heating, just to help educators and technicians understand what we're doing with an inverter and that additional overramping past what we would typically look at as 100%, right? The maximum, you know, operating condition of the compressor. Well, an inverter maximum operating condition is however fast we want to run it. And, you know, there are a lot of times we'll overdrive that by 15%, sometimes 20%, which increases that cooling capability when we need it, increases that heating capability when we need it. So if we're designing a system correctly, right, we're in heating mode, we're designing it for the 99th percentile typically, right? So on the very, very coldest of day, we should be able to get it. On the extreme end, yeah, we might need just a little bit of additional heat in some form or another, but if we can reduce the size of that heat pump, get it down to where we can actually use the ductwork that's in, especially these older homes, right, and keep our static down to where the system was designed for, man, the inverter just does so much better than what people would expect, but it has to be sized properly.
Well, and that brings up a point. You know, sizing a heat pump is a little more challenging or more steps than sizing, say, a furnace or an electric resistance heat, because the heating output changes as the temperature changes. And as the temperature drops, the more capacity that you need. So it's very important that you know how much heat you're going to get out of that heat pump at your temperature. And there's two sets of data points that you're going to get on an inverter system. So you're going to get the rated heating, which is at our rated speed, how much at whatever given outdoor temperature. So there's a large chart that you can get. You know, I want my indoor temp to be 72 degrees and my outdoor temp is 15 degrees, and it'll tell you what your BTU output is at the rated capacity, at the rated speed of the compressor. But then there's another set of data tables that'll tell you what the maximum output is. And so I don't design at the maximum, right? But I need to know what that system is capable of. So if my rated capacity doesn't quite get me where I need on based on my manual J, I'm a little bit short. You know, I don't necessarily want to bump up to another size. I need to go look at that maximum and go, hey, this system can speed up more than what the rated amount is. Let's see if I can clear in just about every time. If you're even remotely close on the rated, your maximum is going to be more than enough, because it's significantly more. But you have to know your BTU requirements. So,
right.
You know, if guys aren't doing manual J's, I don't know what to tell them. There's no good way to size a heat pump, but you know, we've got the data. You know, we have a system builder tool called LATS, and all the manufacturers have their own tools that that you go into. So we call ours LATS. We also publish it in paper form in an engineering manual where they can go and get that information. But, you know, that's what's important is know your numbers and then do the couple of extra steps, size it right, and shoot, the suckers just work. And they work really, really, really well.
Yeah, it really is. You know, we'll get a social media, you get all the negative comments about, you know, new technologies and heat pumps that don't work. And I wish I had the time to go back to everyone and ask, could we actually talk about one of your installations? And could you give me some specific numbers on your duct work? And can let's do an actual heat load and make sure that you selected the right piece of equipment. And then if you had problems with that equipment, we could probably determine what was actually wrong with it. Because you're right, this new technology just runs and runs and runs. And so when people, you know, mentioned that, oh, this new technology doesn't work, I'm like, okay, hold on a minute. We have really just made such a very similar transition that the automotive industry did when we went from carburation into fuel injection, right? We went into electronic management. And we'll just take a prime example. When we took a small block Chevy, right? A 350 Chevy, and we made that transition from carburation and distributor into fuel injection, it was the exact same engine for quite a few years. And the later part had 25 to 30% more fuel efficiency and lasted an additional 50,000 miles. And that's really what we're doing with our technology today in HVAC.
Yeah. I've actually used that exact same analogy, you know, and where what it makes me think of is these technicians and, you know, guys that have been in the field for a long time, you know, they're very comfortable putting their gauges on and getting their thermometers and their probes and knowing how a system operates based on a mechanical thermal expansion valve and a constant speed compressor that's spinning at one constant speed. They know how to work on all that. And going from that to a system where you're now plugging in a computer or a module or something that's going to go to your cell phone or your tablet, that's scary. Well, go talk to the mechanics in the 90s because
exactly it.
They all did the same thing. They had timing lights and vacuum gauges and all that stuff, and they had to trade them in for these scan tools. You know, now the first thing you do when you pull into a shop is they go grab their tablet and they plug it into your car and they watch every single little thing that's going on in there. Well, that's what's happened to air conditioning, you know, with the LG tool and there's plenty of others, but with the LG tool, you plug it in and we can record the runtime of that system and we can watch every little thing that's going on, you know, the temperatures inside and the pressures inside and what these sensors are seeing. And, you know, the diagnosis is different, but a lot of guys have come to me and said, hey, yeah, it was different. I had to learn it, but golly, it's so much easier now. Now that I understand it, now that I've gotten educated on it and brought myself up to speed and kind of wrapped my head around, okay, this isn't really all that different. I'm just seeing my data in a different way. It's actually a whole lot easier to work on.
Oh, and incredibly. And especially, like you said, as our newer technology that allows us to connect these pieces of equipment. Well, let's go back and talk about that automotive analogy again. My very first fuel injection I worked on, I was a senior in high school. I had this little Bronco 2, right? Had throttle body injection, first one I'd ever worked on, and it was having problems. And so as I'm reading my manual, I was really big into, that's kind of how I got into being a tech. I liked reading manuals, right? Like fixing stuff. And so I'm looking through this Chilton manual and I go, oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's interesting. This throttle position sensor could be the problem. And the book is telling me that I can actually read the voltages off from it. So I'd taken some electrical classes in high school. I already had me a little analog meter and I was able to check the 5 volt DC coming into the throttle position sensor. And at 2000 RPMs, I should have approximately this voltage coming out of it. And oh, its voltage is not correct. Let me go get me a new throttle position sensor. Boom. Runs great. Right. And so I look at that same thing when I'm with pressure transducers and temperature thermistors. And you know, we got manuals to teach us what those numbers are, but we've also got the technology. So when those OBD2 scanners started coming, it was OBD1s, that first generation in that throttle body, when those came in and you could plug it in and it would go, oh, by the way, your throttle position sensor is off by X amount of accuracy. Well, it's kind of what we're starting to look at in our inverter world. the inputs are there. And so the technology is able to look at systems and tell us more and tell us faster than what we could typically do on our own by checking everything individually. Technology.
And we still have it. What it does is it points you to the right direction. It's going to say, hey, it's your throttle body sensor, or it's your whatever from this throttle here. You don't have to blindly believe that, although it's right most of the time. It's probably easier just to get that part. But the data and the information is still there. We still have all of our repair manuals that tell us, hey, go take your meter, go ohm out this thermistor or this motor, or check your voltage here. There's still ways to use those skills that we have developed as technicians over the years. You know, that's not just out the door, although it's sadly going out the door. We need that knowledge, and we need the technicians to retain that ability and that understanding so that we don't just have parts changers coming up through the trades, but actual technicians that use the technology and use the tools that they have that say, hey, this is likely your problem. It's not always right. There may be something else that's causing it to misread this, where if we're just throwing parts at it, well, eventually if we change enough stuff, hopefully we get it. But, you know, if we actually know what we should be looking for and we can go check individual pieces and parts, that information has not gone away. It is still available. It's in the manuals. You got to dig. You got to read a little bit. You know, we've got some nice flow charts in one of our service apps that takes you through step by step by step. Okay, check this. It should be this reading. This should be your reading on this thermistor. Is it? Is it not? It's a tough spot for technicians. You know, it is, and I get it, and I empathize with them. But I guess my message to them is, don't be super afraid of it. It's not really changing. Like you said, the engine didn't change. The internal combustion engine is still the same principles as it was 100 years ago. Well, guess what? Air conditioning and heat pumps is still the same technology. The refrigeration cycle is still the same technology, or the same principles, not technology, but the same principles that we've always had. It's just the technology has made it different, exactly. More computer driven
and more capable. And that's really when we talk about these inverters that have these capabilities in these lower temperature ranges, and they have these capabilities to go very low capacities and very high capacities depending on our demand. It really makes for a high efficiency system. We just need to understand the technology a little bit. And so I feel like there's this beautiful opportunity in our industry for contractors and technicians to start learning more, to start partnering with our manufacturer educators like yourself and LG, that is taking that technology and simply going, hey, let's help you see what this can do, and let's put it in the right application. Because when it is, you're going to have a beautiful thing. You're going to have systems that have varying heating and cooling capabilities that do so much better of a job, are so much more efficient, and are easier to service when you understand how they actually function. So I love it. I think it's very exciting myself.
Yeah, to one of your original points, and you just mentioned it again, it's got to be applied right, you know, and installed right. But installation, I'm seeing the guys are, okay, teach me how to put it in, teach me how to put it in. What I'm not hearing very often is, teach me how to apply it. Exactly. And really, that's not a manufacturer job. You know,
it's an industry.
We've got to do better as an industry at how to do manual J's, taking the time. There's some amazing tools out there. I mean, there's apps now on iPads where you can scan a house and you know, as well. It's fantastic.
Phenomenal.
You know, we've got a partnership with one of them, in their average time for a manual J on an existing build house is 12 minutes start to finish.
Isn't that nuts?
If you can't stop for 12 minutes to do a manual J, sorry, but Callie, you're going to sell these people a piece of equipment for thousands and thousands and thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars now, and you're not going to take 15, 20 minutes to make sure that you're giving them the right size that's going to work right. You know, just because you roll up on a house and it has a 4-ton, I mean, I started my career selling in the field, and I don't know what the percentage is. I'm guessing somewhere around a third of the systems that I replaced, I didn't put in the same size unit
right.
that it had. And that required a conversation with the homeowner and, hey, there's a good reason why I'm about to take your 4-ton system out and I'm only going to give you a 3-ton back. Mm-hmm. But it's in your best interest. So, I mean, I had to explain that to them and that was challenging at times, but always did it. I never bent. And I never once had somebody call me up and say, hey, Phil, this thing doesn't keep up anymore. Rah, rah, rah. Never happened because we did the manual J. We knew what was going in. So, you know, if we do that, then we're going to get it right. But in talking about some of these newer homes that are being built, these new construction homes, your home, you know, the days of 400, 500, 600 feet per ton, which was never really a thing to start Yeah. I mean, it kind of sort of got you close in some environments, yeah. I guess, but you know, I've seen manual J's that are 1600, 1700 feet per ton, you know, depending where you're at. So now you've got this, say it's a 3,000 square foot home and I need 2 tons of cooling. That's 800-ish, 700 to 800 CFM that I'm going to distribute through 3,000 square feet. That gets really, 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 really challenging.
Yeah.
And that's where the inverters and the multi-zone pieces of equipment really come into play, because now instead of trying to distribute that little bit of air through a large area, we're going to send the refrigerant to different areas, different zones of the home, and then let it go to work in that area. So we may have a couple of small different ducted air handlers, maybe some ductless, and then there may even be some transfer fans that are put in there, because there's some rooms that have such a low load that we just need to push a little bit of air mm-hmm. through them.
Mm-hmm.
You can even do a whole bedroom with a transfer fan. I've got some apartments that have been built where they put a single zone wall mount in a 2-bedroom apartment and they just use transfer fans to push the air from the living room into the bedrooms. As long as you give it a path out, that wall mount, and it brought down the installation cost dramatically. Yeah. And what was interesting is prior to that, they were using 3-zone mini splits, mm-hmm. wall mount splits for these apartments. When you've got bedrooms that are hundreds, maybe a low thousands BTU, and we're putting 7,000 to 9,000 BTU heads in these bedrooms and they're grossly oversized. So what they actually found is not only did they reduce their install cost dramatically, they're running better, they're using less power, and the tenants in those apartments like it better than the 3-zone system.
That's
because
cool.
It's not short going through those small rooms.
Exactly.
So the transfer fan has got to become part of our repertoire again, and just understanding the air movement will handle the BTUs, whether it's a wall mount, a ceiling mount, doesn't really matter, a ducted system. But we may have to use some ancillary devices to move the air in and out of different rooms. And there's so many different ways, and there's so many different companies that are producing high efficient, quiet, you know, there's ducted models, there's some that are through the wall, there's some that go up the wall cavity and then into the bedroom, and however you want to do it, whatever one works for your application. If there's a certain brand that you like, great. But you've got to think a little bit outside the box when we're designing these new homes. You know, how am I going to get that air over there? Am I going to take a ceiling cassette and run a small duct off of it? And depending on what the application is, that might work. It doesn't flow as much as some guys think it does. I've seen them try to do a bedroom with that and they're like, I don't get any airflow out of this. Yeah, it's not going to give you a lot, but if you need to just stir some air through a master closet or something like that, great. You know, put in a ceiling cassette in the master and then run a small duct over to the closet and just kind of push some air through there. It may work great for an application like that, but you know, with these low load homes, we've got to realize that we can't just throw in a traditional style duct system. And the other thing is when they build them so tight, so much of the load fluctuation is not from the weather anymore, because the home is built so efficient that the sun and the outside temp doesn't change the inside environment as much as the internal loads do. So when all of a sudden everybody shows up in home, that 5 or 6 person family now makes a big difference on the load of the home, where it used to be the people in the house weren't that big of a factor because, you know, the windows and everything else were the big play. Well, now some of that matters. And then the other thing is just getting the runtime that you need to keep the moisture down in those homes. And all of that, you know, all of it just points back to the inverter technology is the only technology that can really handle it. And it is the technology that's moving forward. And if you look at not only LG, you look at every major manufacturer in the US, they're all incorporating that technology into their lineup. I mean, are they still making single speed and two speed systems? Absolutely. But they're making more and more of the inverters. And LG has got a whole new product lineup that's coming out next year. And this isn't here to be a sales pitch or anything like that, but we've got...
So we need to talk about what's coming. That's very important.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, what we've got is, you know, everybody thinks of LG as like just a mini split brand where it's just a wall mount up on the wall. You know, we've got a 5-ton ducted air handler that can do anything and everything that any heat pump system, you know, or furnace system pretty much can do, you know, so we can take out an existing system and put in what looks and feels just like any other air handler, handles up to an inch of static pressure. So you pull that old air handler out, you put the LG air handler in, and you've taken them from, you know, single stage or two stage to now an inverter without having to redo the entire system, assuming that the duct system was put in well and is still in good condition, is sized appropriately. We don't have to get into redoing all that stuff. And, you know, we've had that line for a while. Well, our next line that's coming out is still going to be an inverter line, but it's going to be more of a contractor budget line where some of the efficiency has dropped out of it a little bit. Some of the cold climate heating capabilities have been dropped out of it just a little bit. It's still going to be amazing compared to what we've used to seeing, but instead of zero, maybe it's, and I haven't seen the numbers, maybe it's 14 or 17 degrees where they're rated to, but it's going to be price competitive with some of the single stage systems that we are currently using, but it's going to be with an inverter. So we're not going to make anything that doesn't have an inverter in it, because that's the future of where we're going. And so we're going to be able to really move into that new construction and that replacement market even stronger with this new series. Should be out probably second quarter of this year. We've got our existing series and our cold climate series, but that budget line is the one that's going to be
intermediate
out next year. We got some pieces of it. We released it last year and it had some holes in the lineup. It was kind of one of those, let's see what it does.
Yeah. You bet.
It was smaller sizes. It was like a ton up to 2.5 tons. So it lacked the 3-ton and above
the replacement
sizes. And so it made it some challenging for contractors to say, hey, I really want to dive in deep with this line. But it allowed us to kind of see and test a few things and see how it would react in the market. It reacted very well. So when the new refrigerant, the R32 line, comes out, it's going to be a full line. You know, we're going to have everything from 1-ton ducted system. So not only are we going to have 1.5 tons, we're going to have a 1-ton ducted system all the way up to a 5-ton ducted system. Because like we were talking about low loads, there's a lot of additions or even small homes that maybe don't even need 1.5 tons, you know? Yeah. So we're going to give you a 1-ton option. And then, you know, with like the pancake units, the mid static units, we're going to give you a 9,000 BTU option. So we can really get into those smaller loads, either breaking up a large home into different zones or smaller homes that we've been oversizing for a long time.
Exactly. I love it. Love hearing that. I mean, it's very apparent that our industry is going inverter, as it should. We're all starting to make transitions. The important thing as contractors and technicians and educators is to dive back into actual load calculations and understanding not just the full load, but the partial load at different temperatures to be able to select the right equipment and then work with your manufacturer just to see what products are coming out and the capabilities of them, because it's going to be a whole new generation of our industry and I'm very excited for it. And if we start focusing on understanding the load, then learning the equipment will actually be kind of the smallest part of it.
Yeah, the equipment really hasn't changed drastically. You know, I know we're kind of in the middle of that transition from 410A to the new A2L refrigerants. You know, we're using R32 for a lot of reasons, but, you know, there's 454B or R32. And I was digging through some submittals just recently, and there's nothing dramatic that's changing as far as the outputs. You know, the temperatures and the pressures are so similar. You know, we've got a few extra steps just to make sure that we're being safe with it. But when it comes to system design, system performance, it's very, very similar. So there's not going to be this huge learning curve. There's not going to be this huge change there. So, you know, if we can kind of get back into those fundamentals, like you said, get back into proper design, picking the right equipment, and then installing it right, it's fantastic. You know, the contractors that we have that do the things the right way, absolutely love it. You know, sadly there's some where they don't do all the steps right. And, you know, those are the phone calls that I don't enjoy feeling, you know, and usually once we talk through it, it's, oh, I didn't reel up to
do this.
Yeah. Oops. But you know, that's fine, you know, and LG's got our training academies throughout the country. We've partnered with a lot of our distributors that have training academies in there. So you can find places to get educated, whatever your brand is. Obviously I want it to be LG, but yeah, you know, more than that, I want our industry to get better. You know, I want to be a piece of that. I want to be a part of that. I want LG to be a part of that, but I want whatever brand you're putting in, I want you to put it in the best way that it can be for your customer and for our industry.
Such a great statement. Phil, I sure appreciate your time. I encourage everyone to check out LG and hop on the LG ProCast podcast. You're going to learn a lot of information about the changing industry and have a really, really good group of guys to help you along this way. So we appreciate your time and look forward to having some deeper conversation soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.